Welcome to the Terrorist Therapist Show on Renegade Talk Radio with your host, Dr. Carol. Though you may not realize that the ongoing threat of terrorism is affecting your life and that of your loved ones. Each week, Dr. Carol analyzes the hottest topics in terror and helps you and your family reach your dreams despite living in a time of terror.
Charlie Hebdo republishing cartoons. Freedom of speech or asking for trouble? Welcome to the Terrorist Therapist Show. I'm Dr. Carol, a psychiatrist and your terrorist therapist. Yes, indeed, we're on the verge of a very interesting time. When by the time that you hear this, we will be in the midst of the new, the only really, Charlie Hebdo trial, trial for people who are thought to have been accomplices to the main people who were involved in this horrible massacre in January 2015. So I'll be talking about it probably again since the trial is going to be going until November. But right now, what I think is the most interesting part, and you may well have seen the results of this by the time you're listening to this show, the magazine, Charlie Hebdo, has decided to republish the same cartoons that got them in trouble in the first place. By getting them in trouble, I mean the cartoons of the Prophet Muhammad that many radical Islamists did not like. They thought that that was blasphemy. And that caused some, three men in particular, two of them to attack the editorial offices of the magazine, Charlie Hebdo, and one of them to attack a kosher grocery store. I'm going to tell you, I'll tell you more about the actual, remind you of the massacre from 2015. But before I do, let me tell you about this republishing of the Muhammad cartoons. Because the question is, you know, the reason why they're doing this, and I'll read you some quotes from the current editor, but the reason why they're doing this is to continue. Well, first of all, Charlie Hebdo, just to remind you, is a satirical magazine that in France, in Paris, that publishes, that satirizes politicians, religion, all kinds of people, not just the Prophet Muhammad. But that is what, you know, got them in trouble. That is what caused this horrible massacre. Now, they have been apparently asked to republish the cartoons or publish more Prophet Muhammad cartoons, not necessarily the same ones that they did that caused the massacre. But there have been lots of Prophet Muhammad cartoons that Charlie Hebdo has published. And they didn't want to publish them just for the sake of, you know, until they were waiting for something important. And clearly this trial of the alleged accomplices to the men who caused the Charlie Hebdo massacre obviously is the perfect time in a way to be republishing the cartoons. And in another way, you know, what is going to happen? Certainly they are courting danger because there will be people who will take this as a trigger to say, oh, you're doing it again, you haven't learned your lesson. So all right, let me tell you what the editor has said. The editor, the director of the magazine, is named Laurent Sorisseau. And he wrote in the current editorial, the magazine that is published now at the start of the trial, he wrote, "We will never lie down. We will never give up. The hatred that struck us is still there. And since 2015, it has taken the time to mutate, to change its appearance, to go unnoticed, and to quietly continue its ruthless crusade." So 12 people at the editorial office of Charlie Hebdo were killed. These were some of France's most celebrated cartoonists. This was on January 7th, 2015. And they were killed by two brothers, Saeed and Sharif Kouachi, who brought guns and other weapons into the offices. Now, this current Charlie Hebdo cover shows a dozen cartoons, and these were cartoons that were actually first published by a Danish newspaper in 2005. And then it was reprinted by Charlie Hebdo in 2006. And that is when it unleashed a storm of anger across the Muslim world. And there have been, Charlie Hebdo has printed cartoons of the Prophet Muhammad since then as well. Now, at the center of the cover, the current cover, is a cartoon of Muhammad drawn by a cartoonist named Jean Cabou, who was one of the ones who was killed in the massacre. And the headline says, "All of this just for that," in French. So they decided that this was a perfect time to republish the cartoon because there was a significance in it and that it's essential. And he wrote, "We have often been asked since January 2015 to print other caricatures of Mohammed. We have always refused to do so, not because it is prohibited, the law allows us to do so, but because there was a need for a good reason to do it, a reason which has meaning and which brings something to the debate." And now after the massacre, Charlie Hebdo had a cover that showed the picture of Mohammed. And it was, he was holding a sign that said, "Je suis Charlie." Now, I am Charlie. And remember, that was the movement that came after there were protests and so on about this horrible massacre. They were, you know, for free speech. So it said that that cover said, "To a pardonné, all is forgiven, je suis Charlie." And the people from the magazine have said that since that time, since the je suis Charlie movement, people, it's not as strong. People have kind of gone passive or quiet and aren't speaking out as much as they used to with this slogan that united the country in grief. And so they wanted to make the point that, hello, wake up, you know, it's still important to speak up for free speech, and that's what they're doing. Now, what's interesting is that when the president of the French Council of Muslim Worship, Mohammed, nonetheless, Mohammed, Moussaoui, told people to ignore the cartoons, and he condemned violence. He said, "The freedom to caricature is guaranteed for all. The freedom to love or not to love the caricatures as well. Nothing can justify violence." So he is basically trying to calm the potential people down who would potentially erupt in violence again, seeing these cartoons on the cover of Charlie Hebdo again. So these are people, the people who are going on trial are not just little helpers, but the National Anti-Terror Prosecutor said it is about individuals who are involved in the logistics, the preparation of the events, who provided means of financing, operational material, weapons, a residence. So in other words, all of this is essential to the terrorist action. So in other words, it's not just people who were inconsequential to the attacks, but that they were very significant and that this trial is very significant. So indeed, again, this the editor, Sori So, said, "We will never lie down." So these, during the attacks in 2015, there were 12 people who were killed at the office of Charlie Hebdo. And then there were 4 Jewish shoppers who died in the attack on the kosher supermarket. They were, first they were held in, there were lots of people who were held in the supermarket, and then 4 of them were killed. So this is a trial of 14 alleged accomplices. And one of the things that, well, I mean, I guess I'm at the end of the first segment here, but when we come back, well, I want to talk about who these 2 men were who attacked the Charlie Hebdo office, because they were not people who you might think, who you might imagine would do this, you know, in reaction to these cartoons of the Prophet Muhammad. And I will tell you all about them when we come back. Welcome back to the Terrorist Therapist Show, where we're talking today about Charlie Hebdo republishing cartoons of Muhammad, freedom of speech or asking for trouble. This is right on the eve of the terror trial, the trial of alleged accomplices for the people who perpetrated the attack in 2015 on the offices of the magazine Charlie Hebdo and on a kosher supermarket. I was saying I was going to tell you about who the 2 men were who were the shooters at the Charlie Hebdo office. And their names were Sharif and Saeed Kouachi. Now, why I said that you wouldn't, it was a little bit surprising, is because these are not radical Islamists who came from Iran or Syria or, you know, the Middle East and traveled to Paris to do this, you know, because they felt so strongly. Not to say that you have to live in the Middle East to feel strongly about your religion or the Prophet Muhammad or anything like that. But what's also interesting is that their childhood, you know, I always talk about how people who, terrorists, come from originally, before they latch on to a distorted view of radical Islam, they come from a disturbed childhood, a disturbed life before they become a terrorist. Some of them are, you know, it's beyond childhood, but before they actually act out as a terrorist, there is dysfunction in their life. And indeed, these 2 men who attacked Charlie Hebdo are no different. They were actually French citizens, and they were born in Paris. By the way, in case you haven't heard me say this in previous podcasts, I lived in Paris for almost 3 years, and so I particularly have a lot of feelings still for Paris. And so the fact that this happened in my city, I call it New York as my city, that's what caused me to become the terrorist therapist after 9/11, and Paris as well, and London as well, actually. So, okay, these 2 men were born in Paris to Algerian immigrants. That's where the Middle East comes in, or, well, actually Africa. That's where the background, the outside of Paris background comes in. They were orphaned at a young age after their mother committed suicide. So, okay, very traumatic childhood. They were put in a foster home, and then they were moved to an orphanage. So you can kind of see where they would have become angry early on in their life, that life wasn't fair. And they became very interested in radical Islam, And it has been said in some places, it's said that this attack was done for Al-Qaeda. But in other places, it says that it is believed that it was related to ISIS. Both ISIS and Al-Qaeda have taken credit for these attacks. So now Sharif was arrested at 22, and he was put in jail, and he was arrested because he was going to leave for Syria and to become a jihadist and to fight the U.S. troops in Iraq. But instead he was put in jail, and that is where he met a man named Amadi Koulibaly, who was actually the one who attacked the kosher grocery store after the two brothers attacked Charlie Hebdo, because when he attacked the grocery store, he demanded that the police let the two brothers go, because he was friends with one of the brothers in prison, of course, which is another typical story. So, and then in 2008, Sharif was convicted of terrorism and sentenced to 3 years in prison. And of course, they suspended 18 months. Another story, where people convicted and given a prison sentence are then released early. Another mistake. And he was put in prison for recruiting fighters for militant to become jihadists, basically, and to fight in Iraq. So 2008. So they knew both of these previous arrests. They knew that this man was, hadn't given up, hadn't become de-radicalized, hadn't given up his radical Islamist beliefs. And clearly he would be one who did not get the joke, did not think it was funny to have cartoons of the Prophet Muhammad. Now, as I was saying, there have been several incarnations of cartoons on the cover and in the magazine of Charlie Hebdo. So in 2006, they were sued, actually. Islamic organizations sued the magazine under French hate speech laws. They didn't win, but they sued over the fact that the magazine had republished these cartoons that had been in the Danish newspaper. Then in 2011, there was a cartoon that has a picture of Muhammad, and it says, 100 lashes if you don't die of laughter. In the cartoon above the Prophet Muhammad's head, it says that. So, and then in 2012, the magazine published more satirical cartoons about Muhammad, including nude caricatures, and so on. So, this wasn't the first time, but it was the time, that brought about the, in other words, people were watching. They knew that this was, they had continued to publish these cartoons. So, on the morning of January 7th, 2015, these two brothers burst into the editorial office. They probably knew that was the time, 11:30 local time, that was the time when they were having their editorial meetings. Somehow, I have a feeling they knew that and chose that time to be able to kill the most people. And let me just tell you some more. And now, by the way, of course, when they did that at the time, they convinced someone. They took a gun. They threatened this woman and who had a daughter. And they threatened her and got her to put in the code to let them into the building, which is kind of sad. I would imagine she has not She had, and she wasn't killed in the attack. So I imagine the guilt has stayed with her. It will stay with her for the rest of her life. Now the offices are more they have guards, and like Fort Knox. So they killed several cartoonists. They killed an economist. They killed the bodyguard of the editor-in-chief, the cartoonist-in-chief. There was a visitor. There was a proofreader. There were several people. And as these two brothers, terrorists, left the building, they shouted in French, of course, presumably, "We have killed Charlie Hebdo. We have taken revenge for the sake of the Prophet Muhammad." And then also some people have said that they heard them saying Allahu Akbar. Then the next day, Amedy Coulibaly killed a police officer. Then on January 9th, that's when Coulibaly killed the four Jewish men at a kosher supermarket in eastern Paris. And I know this supermarket. I used to go to a temple in Paris that was right there, right in the Jewish section. And I'm sure I, you know, was in this supermarket. I used to go there quite a lot for services. So they demanded, they took people as hostages, and they demanded that the brothers go free. And of course that didn't happen. In the end, the police killed the two brothers who killed the people at the Charlie Hebdo offices. And so four people were killed in the kosher market. They freed, the French special forces stormed this supermarket, and they freed 15 surviving hostages. The brothers were killed in the meantime. They were killed at a print works shop where they had taken refuge. And so it's interesting because, again, Coulibaly said it was carried out in the name of ISIS. And then, but then, as I said, Al-Qaeda takes responsibility too, or credit too. Let me take a break now. And when I come back, I will tell you more about what is happening, what has happened actually since then. This was not the end of terror attacks in France, and it is still, they are still continuing as they are all over the world. So stay tuned. Welcome back to the Terrorist Therapist Show, where we're talking today on the eve of the trial, or at the beginning of the trial. And when you hear this, you will know whether the answer to the question I pose in the title, Charlie Hebdo, Republishing Mohammed Cartoons, Freedom of Speech, or Asking for Trouble? Well, you might know, actually, since this trial of the alleged co-conspirators or accomplices is going to go on until the middle of November. So we might not see uprisings until later. But in any case, I am posing this question. You know, it's certainly, in my opinion, let me just say my opinion is, I think it's very brave of them, and I think it's the editors, the current editors and cartoonists and so on, are talking about is how and I think I alluded to this before, how when this first happened and there was all this, everybody was coming in solidarity with France, Je suis Charlie, I'm sure you saw this on social media and all that. And there was a whole group that continued to meet and continued to fight for free speech. And now this was again 2015, this attack, January 2015. And in 5 years, some people have gotten more passive, while other people, unfortunately, have become more active and violent. But in any case, so they are doing this to remind people, basically, how important it is to stand up still for your freedoms, including especially freedom of speech. And I think that it is very brave of them. Now, of course, as I mentioned, the offices of Charlie Hebdo now, the magazine, is like Fort Knox. It's a lot harder to, you can't just convince somebody to put in the code. It's a lot harder to get up to the actual offices, and there are bodyguards and, you know, all different, lots of things put in to protect the people. But, you know, it's not that hard to find out, to know, well, their names presumably are in the magazine, and it's not that hard to find out where these people live. In fact, I did that myself when I went to Paris to collect my award for my book, Lions and Tigers and Terrorists, Oh My, How to Protect Your Child in a Time of Terror. I wanted to meet with one of the editors or cartoonists from Charlie Hebdo, and I did find his name and went to his house. So if I did it, and I didn't have that long that I was there at that time, so if I could do it in a relatively short amount of time, terrorists who waited, who were planning for quite a while to attack the offices, could do it as well. So just because they're, the office of the magazine is well protected, does it still means that the people who are participating, who are the cartoonists and so on, the editors, all the people who are involved in the magazine are putting their lives at risk and do think that it is worth it. Okay, so I was starting to say, so, now this was, as I said, January of 2015, and then, in November of 2015, there was the attack. There were a number of attacks, as I trust you will remember, including at the Bataclan Theater. They killed 130 people. There were bombings and shootings, and at the sports, at restaurants and bars and the sports arena. And so, you know, this was the magazine, the attack on the magazine and the kosher supermarket were really harbingers of things that came after that. And also I that same time that I was in Paris for the reception of, and to receive my award, I went to the Bataclan Theater. And because I had to feel what it felt like to be in there, and it was pretty chilling. Okay, so there was that. And then the next year, 2016, a Tunisian man who pledged allegiance to ISIS plowed his truck through a crowd, remember, on the boardwalk in Nice, and killed 86 people. So, and then of course, there have been continuing attacks on churches, and, you know, other individual lone wolf attacks in France. So it has not stopped. Whether they put a cartoon on the cover or not, you know, that may well have an impact as to whether there's going to be an uprising of some sort, terrorist kind of attack during the trial. But it is not, there still would be terror attacks in France, whether they put the cartoon on the cover today, you know, this week or not. Now, in fact, there are actually 8,000, as of this moment, there are 8,132 people on France's security watch list. These are people who are suspected of terrorist leanings. And, you know, needless to say, it's very hard to keep track of 8,132 people. And in 2013, just to give you an idea of the extent of this, even though there are thousands on this security list or watch list, there have been a lot of attacks that have been foiled. And in 2013, or since 2013, there have been 61 attacks, terrorist attacks that have been foiled by French authorities, including 32 since 2017. You know, you don't really hear about the ones that have been foiled. Rarely do you hear about those. Then, in addition, we have the terrorists who are going to be freed from jails and prisons. And they're people who, you know, who were convicted of various terrorist offenses and had their sentences, and some of them had their sentences shortened. There are 45 who are due to be freed this year, and another 63 terrorists will be freed in 2021. Now, of course, if there is another uprising during this trial of the accomplices for the Charlie Hebdo case and the supermarket, you know, that may in itself, the trial itself, not just the cartoons, but the trial itself is certainly going to, especially, well, I guess I should say, depending upon the outcome of the trial, if in fact a lot of these accomplices are, or a significant enough number, are found guilty and are given prison sentences, then we could have, you know, attacks based on that. I mean, really, when people want to attack, when they're angry, they can find all kinds of reasons to do so. So now the lawyers representing, the defense lawyers representing the defendants, these alleged accomplices, are, you know, already saying that they hope that that it's going to be a jury trial, and they hope that the judge and the jury and the prosecutor and so on aren't going to just try to use this to make examples out of these people and to give them harsher convictions and sentences than they would otherwise get just because they want to make examples of them. It's a little hard to have an idea of just how serious the sentences will be, but they can face up to life. And you know, depending upon just how involved each of these people are going to be. Now they are expecting 200 victims, survivors, and relatives of those killed to attend this trial. Not quite sure how they're going to fit in that many people, but I guess it's a very big courthouse. So they want to see which of the people, you know, which of the people, the lawyers, the defense lawyers are trying to say that it's very hard to determine just how much, how guilty these people are, just how much they did, you know, because one of them has said, for example, by providing cars, phones, and lodging, did they know what the assassins were preparing to do? If they knew, then they contributed, and it is a matter of knowing to what degree. So, you know, of course, their defense lawyers are going to try to prove that, okay, yes, they did get, you know, of course, it's one thing to get a car for somebody. It's another thing to get a weapon, or it's another thing to connect them to ISIS or Al-Qaeda or, you know, or be in contact with, be a liaison with ISIS or Al-Qaeda. And that's a little different than just providing somebody with a car or a phone. And since the three main people who perpetrated these attacks, the two brothers and the friend of one of the brothers, it's, you can't really cross-examine them or examine them and have them testify and ask them how much did so-and-so have, you know, what did he do for you, and you know, did he know what you're going to use it for? Not that they would have necessarily told the truth about that anyway, but we don't have those key players. So it is a difficult case to prove, and it will presumably depend largely on circumstantial evidence, you know, things that are written, things that testimony of some people. There are some witnesses, like there are the there are some witnesses to things, but it just gets very complicated. Let's put it that way. And it will be fascinating to watch. I am going to be glued to this because it really, you know, certainly there are some of these people who are being put on trial who do deserve to get a sentence, and some of them a very serious sentence because they did know why they were providing whatever it was that they were doing for them. And without them, they wouldn't have been able to organize this themselves. Well, thank you for listening to the Terrorist Therapist Show. I'm Dr. Carol, your terrorist therapist.
If you would like to find out more about terrorism from me, your terrorist therapist, visit my website, terroristtherapist.com. And if you're a parent or teacher and want to build stronger nests for your kids to become more resilient, check out my new award-winning book, Lions and Tigers and Terrorists, Oh My, How to Protect Your Child in a Time of Terror. It's the first and only book about terrorism for kids. You can find it wherever books are sold or directly from the publisher at terrorismforkids.com. Terrorism4kids.com. I'm Dr. Carol, your terrorist therapist.
Thank you for listening to the Terrorist Therapist Show on Renegade Talk Radio with your host, Dr. Carol. We hope listening to the show has made you feel calmer, more resilient, and more able to reach your dreams despite living in a time of terror. You can also check out past shows on Renegade Talk Archives for more insights.